Well, we're looking for everybody to just hit middle of the road and definitely put anything.
I'm sorry.
This is four signs on.
In town.
This is not his.
Hey, staff of the year, you recording?
Oh, no.
Happening?
It says started.
Oh, we are recording. Okay, I'm going to get started here. It's 9 o'clock and call to order September 3rd. Zoning Board Committee. Is there public input today?
I would just like to have on the record what was submitted by the preservation conservation stakeholders for equine from last year. It was a 4-page input. And also 2 letters from Land Trust, the Land Trust of Virginia and Northern Virginia Conservation Trust in support of the easement language in 20401 and 20402.
Okay, when did you submit them?
No, they were submitted directly.
Oh, last time.
No, they were submitted in the last 24 hours to staff. Here's Kelly. She can do it herself now.
I was trying to make sure that you didn't lose.
Do you want 3 minutes? We're in public. Have you wanted? You have 3 minutes.
I have 3 minutes. Okay.
3 minutes is up.
3 minutes is up. Okay. Very good. Got 7 is very fun.
We heard.
I was stalling for you, Kelly.
Where are you? We've all received what we wrote, and so hopefully that kind of says most of our information. We have received.
Yeah, just when was that? What did you?
That's yesterday morning. Staff.
So, can we be on it?
I put everybody that I was told to put on.
Did you send it to Ed?
Life is pictures.
Staff, does anybody have?
I'm trying to.
All right. Go ahead.
We went through a lot of things, and we are very pleased that equestrian event and the removal from Ag Support, and they now have their own use standards. We are also very pleased right now that our setback has been reduced to the current agricultural setback of 60 feet. But we have several other concerns, and one that I did not get a chance, two that we didn't really get a chance to look at, there you go, is that liveries don't appear as accessory uses to have any abilities to have shows, small shows, or clinics. And that is a big part of our livery. Liveries are probably our largest category of equestrian uses in the county. And right now, a lot of them, according to our 2013 survey, are 20 acres or less. So to move them into a 25-acre event center doesn't really work. And the ones that we have that are 15 to 20 acres are going to be grandfathered in. That's going to be prohibitive. So one thing that we would like in accessory uses to be included is small one-ring shows and also clinics, in addition to the accessory uses that are listed in the definition. The other things that we are concerned about is we've never saw before a 2 acre per horse stocking rate. We don't see that is a necessary thing. I don't know where that came from and what the rationale is. I totally understand it if it is for, agricultural animals that rely on pasture 24/7 as their sole source of nutrition. But in the horse world, that's not the case. Most horses that are even out 24/7, they are getting fed and brought in. And so they are not eating down the entire pasture. We don't have to worry about horses not maintaining their weight or anything else by having a slightly less spotting limit or just not having that in that both words in there. Again, if that is going to be the case, you are grandfathering in probably 90% of our liveries at this point. That is going to make them less sellable. That is going to not allow them to expand. So we really need to be considering that. The other things that we are very concerned about is a 12-foot limit on light poles. It's even small, it's lower than what you guys have in the standards of 15. And most of the, most of our outdoor arenas, at least for liveries, are between 100 by 200. And so a 20-to-25-foot pole may be more useful. Again, we need it for not just to make it lit, we need it for safety for the horse and rider. So that's what we're looking at. I will defer to Stacy Metcalf to have more information on the larger events for poles, because again, this is all based on the size of the arenas that you have. And so the arenas for liveries are typically smaller than that. And so we can get away with a slightly lower pole, but certainly not 12 feet. You're going to be hitting the light basically with your horse. Sorry, the rest of this is not coming up. Yeah, I know. Well, we've got all of this, so it's not coming. Can you scroll down a little for me and I can just quickly do any of that? The equestrian events facilities. So again, the allowance of two attendees per acre above 200 attendees. We may need to be looking at this in terms of having another section. We want to have that as more discussion, but the 100 acres as a cutoff for most of these events. Again, deferring to Stacy Carey, Stacy Metcalf, in terms of a place like Morgan Park that has 900 to 1,000 acres, having that cutoff is going to be very difficult. But to be able to have that discussion, and also to be able to make it more streamlined if we do have those events that have to have larger uses. And then lastly, accessory, the fox chasing. We do believe that that could go straight under private stables. Most of them really are privately owned or operated by the hunt. They always have their hounds stabled at, or kenneled at the same facility. So we would like to make sure that that is also not something that is going to be disallowed in there. So it's private. So I think hopefully we can keep that very simple and under more consideration. And then underneath that, the topics for what is considered ancillary to primary use for each use standard. I don't really understand what that is. I'd like that a little bit more fleshed out. And overall, what we would like to see is recommendations for wineries, breweries, and all the other events-oriented areas discussed before we make any final decisions and horses. And lastly, this came about, I didn't get this till Friday. So Loudoun County Equine Alliance has not been able to weigh in on this yet. I think that is very important, and we're not even going to meet until later in October. So we need more time to look at it to give a broader view of everything. But that is a quick overview of what some of the concerns are that we have at this moment.
Okay, and then for the record, your name.
My name is Kelly Fultman, and I'm here right now under the Preservation and Conservation Group. That's what I came in from the zone.
Okay, thank you. Do we have anybody else public speaking? Come on up for your 3 minutes.
Kelly, you want to switch places?
I can do. Didn't realize I was all run in.
I am Trinity Mills, speaking on behalf of Loudoun Wildlife Conservancy regarding the floodplain ordinance updates. We at Loudoun Wildlife Conservancy are strongly opposed to any zoning changes that would permit active recreation uses in the floodplain. Not only does this present major logistical and potential public safety issues, this cannot be disregarded that the floodplain is a sensitive environmental feature. Allowing active recreation uses and their associated intense development could have disastrous consequences. The floodplain waterway corridor that buffers provide the last quality habitat for wildlife in highly developed areas. This can be seen in land use patterns nationwide, and Loudoun County is not an exception. Especially in the eastern part of the county, where industrial and residential development is so densely packed, green space is largely restricted to the floodplain. Floodplain provides critical ecosystem services that cannot be compromised. The habitat within the floodplain is crucial to the subsistence of Loudoun's wildlife, both terrestrial and aquatic. Forested areas within the floodplain are refuge for native plant and animal species that have been pushed out of their homes by data centers and housing developments.
Additionally, the development restrictions in the floodplain allow for woodlands which support stream health and water quality by filtering pollutants, limiting erosion, and maintaining lower water temperatures. Many of Loudoun's streams and waterways are already regarded as impaired based on our own benthic macro vertebrate data. Fact that would be drastically made worse by the infringement of additional development on the critical buffer that the floodplain provides. Active recreation uses are considered such because they require a degree of development intensity that has a significant impact on the environment. Ball fields, even green ones, cannot filter and disperse rainwater in the same manner that trees of a mature forest ecosystem can. Permitting these uses alongside the impervious surfaces of their parking allotments will result in increased instances of flooding to the detriment of both wildlife and the people in Loudoun. To allow active recreation uses is to disparage the wildlife that relies on the habitats the floodplain protects.
Any else?
I'm lovely.
I'm Avis Frenchoff from Farm Bureau, and basically, we're very concerned about the limitations placed on production agriculture. At your TLOG meeting, there were a lot of creative ideas for farm worker housing, and we don't see anything in here for regarding that, except the change from a required 200 square foot to 100 square foot per person living space allocation. We should be adding an allowance for a shared cooking and bathing and washing facility with individual spaces for people to live in. That is a federal model that works really well. And I think that we can accommodate that in Loudoun if you are if you respect what the land can deal with in terms of water and I don't understand why a few RVs couldn't be allowed on a property, on a farming property, a few RVs that are perhaps owned by the workers that do travel. There are a lot of models where farm workers travel and they have their own facilities, living facilities. They may not be regulation here in the county, but certainly that is a model that could work here. Processing seems to be really limited. I don't think you really want to do that. I think that local people really enjoy good food produced locally. You could look at farmers markets and see how well they're attended and understand that people here have the socioeconomic intelligence and ability to pay for good food. My company is a model for that. We grow a lot of the fruit that we use in our bake. If I can't have production facilities, you're not going to have that. You're going to be stuck with, you know, Sara Lee frozen pie at Giant or a Costco pie. Now, there's not necessarily too much wrong with there, but there's not a lot of great stuff there. There is a lot of great stuff in the product that we provide because I am getting fresh pumpkins, fresh strawberries, fresh blackberries, et cetera. And I think you guys want that. I think people in this county want that. And it's very achievable, but you have to give us the ability to process that food and to store that food in freezers and refrigerators. And the percentages that are allowed are kind of ridiculous. I don't understand why we're being disenfranchised as production farmers. I think we've been ignored at least, and we're being punished at worst here. And I can only assume that it's because people don't understand farming. You don't understand the risk, the inherent risk that is farming in at a basic level. We're dependent on weather. We don't get too many government subsidies at a small level unless we're big production farmers, and there's not a whole lot of those left here in this county. A lot of the land ability for young farmers is small. It's less than 5 acres. You need to allow people to do what they can do. People can do a lot on a 2 or 3 acre farm. Should I close?
Okay, thank you.
I'm sorry, that's
anybody else?
Avis Renshaw. Avis Renshaw is the first department. She was mom's up the pie.
Good.
I'm John Lovegrove. I represent the Fox Chasing Community. I just want to let you know that seven hunts in Loudoun County. And between all the chases, we put 30,000 acres into conservation easements. It's a pretty big piece of the economy. We talked at the first meeting about some of the things we're looking for. I didn't see really anything reflected in the updated zone regulation, but working with Kelly, the LCEA, I think we've got a pretty good handle on private stables. I think will cover us, and some of the kennel requirements will cover us as well. So I really want to say I think it's important to understand and consider the fox chasing community and what it brings to Loudoun County. I think it's a unique aspect of our community, really something that has been here for a long time. It's a wonderful tradition. Don't kill the fox. Basically, no one worries about that. We just chase it around like a bunch of idiots. And we're upselling clothes, but it's really a great thing to do. And I think, like I said, I just want to make sure we get remembered in this forum, and that there's nothing that we do here that is going to prevent this great tradition from continuing here. So that's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? There's room for one more slide. That's Mark.
But can I just make a comment?
How can you do it after Paula?
No, it's about Paula.
Sure. You're the last speaker.
Okay.
What do you need a time?
No.
Are you less than 3 minutes?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you very much for the four people who came, but I did also alert staff that there was no public notice for this meeting. There was nothing on the blog, and there was no communication from the county about the opportunity for public input here. So the four people who came, I applaud them, as well as the two conservation easement land trusts that were alerted over a Labor Day weekend. So I'm hoping that going forward, it'll be more clear to folks who are wanting to provide input, because it is difficult to find it on the ZOC website. And I think unless the four people correct me, I would say that everything that we just heard was discussed, was represented in the 4 years of the zoning ordinance rewrite, and most of it was also part of the stakeholder conversations. So none of what you just heard was new. Would you agree?
Okay. I'm not sure which one is to do difference. We have public input every month on our agenda. Our agenda is posted online, and I'm not exactly sure what you think we should do differently.
I'm referring to the fact that the project plan for Walrus is indicating that this time slot will be considered public input for Walrus. And because of the lack of notice, it should not, it can be perfectly fine for ZOC representatives, but it cannot be considered public input for the project plan.
I think this is public input for ZOC.
According to the project plan for Walrus, it says that this time slot is also public input for the project.
I've received the email earlier today, and Moore and I had a conversation. I'm going to be working with our public affairs communications office to make sure that we've got that all clear for everyone.
Thank you,
Brian. I would like to add, the four people that came to speak, three contacted me with questions about how to sign up and where to go, and a fifth that couldn't in the end make it had the same questions. I think indicating that clearly would be helpful.
Okay. Any closures?
I guess for disclosure, I am an advisory council member of NPCT and a land holder for the Land Trust of Virginia, so I did provide them assistance on how to provide it.
Approval of action report for July 2nd.
Simmons.
Any changes?
Yes.
So moved.
I was.
You were not here?
No, I was. I'm listed as here, but I left after about 2 minutes. I wasn't feeling well.
We need you credit for showing us.
Yeah. But I,
You whether or not you want to list me this year when I wasn't here.
I think it would have been three times we could have voted to kick you off, so I wanted to make sure you got.
Well, I couldn't find my son, my name when I got here, so I figured you already had.
I think you're good.
I think you're good.
Your homework was turned in, but not graded.
That's right. Thank you. All right, who moved? Your second?
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Thank you.
Hey, Ryan Stennis.
All right, I'll walk through the first few here on the agenda before I turn it over to the other staff we have for today. So the first one on your agenda, the CPAM 25-1 and ZOAM 24-1 is the data center standards and locations. That's moving forward according to project plan, and there will be sending the Board of Supervisors business meeting on September 16th. Latest on that. Moving forward, the packet, I believe, is in the packet you guys got. The second one, a lot of talking, ZOAM 25-1, that's the zoning ordinance rewrite adjustments, or quote unquote, what we've termed the cleanup ZOAM that we talked about here quite a bit. And taking that tonight, business meeting for the resolution intent to amend. And assuming that gets approved, then we'll continue forward on that project. All right. Also in your packets, just for your information, and covers most of these that we talked about in the updates, is the Department of Planning and Zoning's work plan that was presented to the supervisors on July 16th. And then let's scroll down and get into the meat of today's meeting. We've got two of the projects that we have staff here to discuss. And you good in order here? Start with Walrus.
Well, you're here now, Tina.
Yeah, sorry. Talk to Jim, then Percival, thanks.
But you want to get out by 10? Let's flip it.
Okay.
Unless anybody has a problem with that.
All right. Folks, we'll start with the floodplain ordinance update and turn it over to my associates to cross the table here.
So good morning, everyone. So I think there's a couple of things that we wanted to go over before we have a conversation about active recreation, which is the main purpose of this meeting. First off, if you recall, share my screen. In your package, you received two documents. One of which is a table that we had talked about last meeting. As you can see, there were anything that was additions from the last meeting we highlighted in yellow. So we just wanted, before proceeding, wanted to see if there were any questions or outstanding issues related to staff's responses that we needed to talk about. I think that's kind of how we decided we wanted to talk about it.
Yep.
And those, you know, we also had the ordinance update, which we gave you an update, and any of the changes from the ordinance also were highlighted in yellow. So at this point, we wanted to know if there were any additional concern issues related to either the table or the ordinance language before proceeding with further discussions.
Good.
Right. I guess I want to iterate that the floodplain ordinance is now part of natural and environmental resources chapter of the ordinance. And as such, I realize that the RISCR covers the floodplain, but to act as if the floodplain is not a natural resource protection area in terms of the purpose statement. We talked about this before, and the staff has said that this is all about safety and all of that, not really about natural resources. But being part of this chapter, it just seems like that's a different.
Anybody else?
I had sent a question. I don't know if it's feasible to answer it, but on, I don't know if it's whatever line number it is, number 30, the county attorney's office did respond to my original question regarding whether or not the same requirements for special events and floodplain will be equally applied in other areas through Walrus. So this is one that you would consider an overlapping issue between our two topics today. And that would be pending to see whether or not it would be incorporated in the discussions in October and November. So it's just pointing out that this is an overlapping concern or issue, that if it's going to be in the floodplain, that it should be consistent in other areas.
Did you say line 30?
I think 38.
38? Okay.
It's regarding special events. The county attorney office response says in the yellow highlight that it should be examined further. And so the question is, will it be incorporated in Walrus discussions as the county attorney is recommending for it to be examined further? It doesn't need to be answered right now.
I'm just reading it for the first time, but that seems to overarch beyond floodplains. So, this is a topic that probably falls into those categories and flaws.
The reason I would bring it up is that the goal for ZOC, one of the goals that is stated is that we are to look at consistency. So it's a point of consistency.
Okay, anybody else?
Question of kind of technical thing, the active recreation, say that you are now adding the P with the strikeout. I don't see that in the version that came out with the packet.
Where we have not changed it yet, so we have this discussion is a discussion with the board on October 7th.
Okay, so the draft that's attached here, how old is that? Has it been updated, or is it still back? It seems like there's some things that have been updated. I saw the major floodplain for the drainage.
So it should have been a strikeout, a permitted with a strikeout. So we'll correct that.
Yeah, I thought I had updated it. I apologize for that.
Okay. So this, the draft that's here is supposed to be the most
correct.
Current.
Yes, it has all the highlights of things that have changed.
Hey, Michael, I have a good question. And it's more kind of question to learn. So if I have this right, you guys are going to go back to the board or the Lakers, whatever, sometime in October, right? What was it you all needed from us today? I mean, was it I don't want to say a vote, but is it like, this is the last time we're going to see it, okay?
It won't be the last time you see it.
Well, I mean, you know what I'm saying, right? You're going back with recommendation, and is the goal here that it's just we all get comments and you take them, or, you know, the majority of ZOC thinks it should be X or Y? And I just didn't, I was... want to make sure I knew what we were supposed to.
Yeah, so I think there's three things today that we want to accomplish. One, we want to see where everybody is with the table and the current draft of the zoning ordinance. Two, I have another issue to bring up in terms of, if you recall, we're also working through the PRC right now, Public Review Committee, who deals with the FSM, the Facility Standards Manual. As part of that, there was some discussion on uses that I want to talk about to see where the committee is on that. Because it's a different direction than we've gone in the past. If the committee is interested in that, then we will draft language to deal with that. The last thing we need is we do need some type of recommendation from this committee about active recreation of the floodplain. We will, that recommendation will be part of the item that goes to the board on October 7th. And the things that we're talking about today are the same things we're going to be talking about with the board on that issue. So and we have a presentation to give to you to kind of help you understand the
past, you know, ordinances, the past general plan, current structure, how it is, and some discrepancies that we have between different sections, between the floodplain and specifically Brisker. So that's kind of where we're, what we want to do today. Now, moving forward, there is a process that we kind of go through, right? So once we have general language, we still have to go back to DCR and have them look at it generally. And we're going to do a referral to staff to have them look at what the most current language is. After that, we will be coming back to both PRC, because if there's FSM changes, is an NZOC. And at that point, in my mind, you would give a final recommendation on the ordinance once we've done that.
So I guess my question is, we need to do anything else on this sheet?
Everything. If no one has any additional questions.
Those are.
Go ahead, Warren.
Not a question, but I just would like to say that although I definitely appreciated the number of times that you responded, I don't necessarily agree with leaving all public notice in the FSM is sufficient to meet the goal stated by the board's document in April 2024 to develop a public notice input process for property owners to improve transparency and make owners aware of changes to the best available floodplain. So I just wanted to go on record saying that although if it's a decision to just leave it in the FSM, that does not accomplish the original goal in my view. And the reason that perhaps there could be a way that the county website was launched by Clint Marker years ago was that he asked representatives to sit in the room and to be testers to see how long it would take them to find certain things. And that's something that could be done proactively to determine if this is sufficient by asking some people, say, see if you could find this information, how many clicks have taken. That would demonstrate whether or not it's meeting the goal.
So I think, yes. So I think you have Zoc's input on this chart.
Yes. Yeah, and I just wanted to say, Mr. Pacioli, if you do all markup, you can see the straight through. And it's highlighted. So I sent over the simple markup.
I thought it could have been a viewing item, you know, or maybe show.
I just showed, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you. Yes. So so during PRC, there was a discussion about uses
this is the chart.
No, this is not the chart. So this isn't part of the chart. So PRC brought up specifically uses that are associated with structures, accessory structures, such as single family, and this is Fairfax's language, so this I'm just bringing this up as an example, where things like, you know, gardens and play areas and, you know, patios and those types of things, wanting to ask if that's something that could be considered as a use. So right now in the ordinance, and this has been the way it's always been, is that any, obviously, single family or any residential structures are not allowed in floodplain. Okay. And therefore, anything accessory to that use is not allowed in floodplain. So this, what they're asking is very different than how we've always done floodplain. We have, I think, in the past had some of these issues come up, like gardens, for example, where people have wanted to have gardens. Obviously, their house may not be in the floodplain, but the rest of their yard might be in the floodplain. And so there are specific uses that, you know, like gardens, where we've had to look at over the years. So I'm bringing this to you to see if this is something you think we should add. This is Fairfax's language. It talks about, I think that we would be comfortable with some of these things, but not all of these things, like game tennis or play courts and those kinds of, but like gardens, you know, anything that doesn't have major fill, anything with fill in the floodplain is not something that we think should be allowed. Right now, our violations, we don't really have violations I've seen related to these areas. Most of our violations are related to fill in the floodplain, as well as, you know, things like the building materials or something that's been placed there, I think, for the most part. So we just wanted to get your input on this. We could draft language that allows for some of these, you know, making sure that things are anchored, but it would be very different than the way we've proceeded in the past. So we wanted to get Zoc's input on this in particular.
Thank you.
So I, this issue, actually, I've had several people contact me in regards to, there are people, and I forget now, excuse me, whether it was Broadburn Farms or Potomac Farms, that have had an issue where they've actually been found in violation and told to move their playground equipment. If anybody's familiar with those two areas, if you know, if you're in the back part, or almost all of it is in floodplain, some variation of it. And they literally had to hire an engineer, and they spent a ton of money just to save the playset that they'd gotten from Costco that their kids were enjoying. So they had brought it up to me, and I've had about six or eight of them in that area that reached out to me saying, we don't understand what the big deal is. You know, we spent all this money, and at the end of the day, we still don't know if it's got to go down or go up or whatever it is. I know that one of the ladies in Eric Zick's office has helped two or three of them try to get through the process. But to me, it just seems kind of, I mean, when you look at that area, it doesn't make a lot of sense that they're being told that they're, I mean, there's no building permit required. There's no anything required for it. You know, it's an anchored playground set that's setting down there. So I do think there is some things that we should look at in regards to, like, children's playhouses, dog houses, those type of things that should be looked at if they're back in the back of these yards that can be allowable.
So there is one thing that should be mentioned is, so we treat all of our floodplain as one way. So if these items are permitted, we will need engineering analysis for all of them.
So a playground from Costco, right, you're going to require an engineer.
Correct. You'll have to require it.
Even if it's an allowed use.
Correct.
Why?
Because that is what is required of development in the floodplain.
So how do we change that?
How much? There's nothing to change.
So you're telling me that if I have a driveway, I mean, you're telling me if I go to Costco and I buy a doghouse, somehow or another, I'm supposed to know that I now need to get, and what am I supposed to do? Deliver you the box so that you can see it? I mean, I don't mean to sound ridiculous, but it kind of feels that way.
So I mean.
I'll interject too. This is Jason, and I know Joe, Michael, we've talked about this in circles at BRC, probably at least the last decade. And this has been FEMA's rule. And so I don't know why we have to rehash it every time.
They don't care. No, they don't care about the use.
Right.
But they care about, like, they're allowed to have anything we want.
Right.
In the floodplain. However, the stipulation is we have to prove that there is no impact to the floodplain with whatever we put in there.
We have the same discussion with fences.
Yes. So planting trees,
Boy Scout projects.
It's not the issue. It is what the impacts of that use are.
Am I correct in thinking that this is, again, a neighbor's report situation, so that if you have a swing set in the backyard and nobody reports it, you don't deal with this issue?
Yeah. I will also say, I would love to talk to you more about the specific properties. I have never had a violation come to me for a playground.
I sent information to you guys about a month ago, but I'll resend it.
You mentioned it.
No, but I sent it to you from from Eric's office and the woman that was dealing with the folks. But I can read.
If you could resend that, I don't know if I'll get any of that, so that'd be great.
It was back in June.
So, hold on, but can I ask a question? Does Fairfax require?
They don't treat all their floodplain as floodway. They have flood fringe, and flood fringe has less requirement. So I imagine if the...
So FEMA's doesn't call flood fringe as floodplain?
So we're really weird in Loudoun, okay? Weird in Loudoun. We have everything is flooded.
We take it louder and into the light.
Everything is floodway in Loudoun. So not like that.
Floodway is like an engineered term, but we administrate it. We don't have the engineers determine what the flood rate is. We just went ahead and turned it off.
Bill?
Yeah, that was something that Loudoun County opted like 20 something years ago. I think it was to provide better flood insurance without realizing the big tax to develop the community.
There was also something that we already were so restrictive in what we allowed that, like, because we didn't allow residential uses, we weren't going to have people doing engineering analysis for playgrounds because it just wasn't even allowed.
So, I mean, I know kind of the answer, but I was hoping maybe you could share for the group, like, what it takes to show that there's a no rise. And I think a lot of it depends on whether there's a prior study done on that floodplain. And if there isn't, the cost to do like a floodplain study and evaluation could be, if you're getting surveyed, things like that, could be $30,000, $40,000, $50,000. If you're doing a no rise on like putting a playground in the Potomac River floodplain, like that's probably like a couple $1,000 because you're not going to have an impact on a floodplain that big. But if you could expand on that for everyone, so everyone understands like the magnitude we're talking about, what it would take to put a Costco playground set in a floodplain that has never been studied.
So that is something we also are expanding on as part of our FSM requirements. But yes, to do some kind of, FEMA does have no rise, no impact certifications, but those do still require some form of looking at a cross section in a model and assessing whether or not there's an impact on that particular cross section. And a cross section is just a study area of one plane. So if there is cross sections nearby or available, that is pretty straightforward. If not, there is requirements extends to develop. I mean, I think we have them submit for trees, and it's $4,000-$5,000.
This is for invasive species, so it's worth 1,000 each. So if you go to remove the invasive species in the floodplain, you have to do a no-rise certification.
Wait, one no good deed goes unpunished is what we're saying?
You are correct.
There you go.
And this does impact like soil and water conservation districts, riparian buffer planters, and social fences. So yes,
we pay
for all of those from the county, gives the money to the conservation district. But yes, it does. We have to pay for those. So I think we really wanted to talk about active rec today, so I don't want us to get too sidetracked with this, and they kind of go along with each other. So why don't we go ahead and...
Can I ask one question? So the bottom line on this is, we asked staff to come back with language. Whatever you come back with, it could go in there, would require announced.
Exactly.
I mean,
you can build a condominium in the
My question to Sonic is, do we want staff to come back with language to review and react to?
So here's my question.
You have to answer my question first.
Well, no, exactly. It hopefully helps you answer your question. Is this something 95 or 98% of the public? I mean, are we creating work for the sake of something that's not actually going to matter?
I think the reality is, unless somebody calls us and says, my neighbor has a playground and they're in the floodplain and I want you to do something about it, we don't care.
No, I don't mean that. I don't mean that. We shouldn't write ordinances that we don't actually intend to enforce, even if in practicality we only do complaint-based enforcement.
Right.
We should have ordinances because we intend that to be the rule of the land. My question is the public saying, damn it, I need my playground. What is wrong with you, Loudoun? Change this. So, I mean, is this something where thousands of people are storming the gates, or is it five people a year get upset that they couldn't?
My experience just working with them, and just I predate Maggie and Melanie and Sebaldman. It's the older communities, because nowadays typically you don't have a lot of plain old residential lots. So what is that? Broadlawn Farms?
I would say, a majority of it is. I mean, Broadlawn Farms.
My question is, are we creating an answer for a problem that doesn't exist?
We're creating a restriction for something that people don't know about.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what we're doing.
Thank you.
And the question is do you want to carve out to that restriction? That's what I hear the question is.
Yeah. And again, it's my they can't do it now anyway, and there's no one burning down City Hall.
So is there any?
I just wanted to say, to me, if we're going to start saying we're only going to look on things, depending, and I don't mean this to some, but anyway, if we're going to start only looking at issues if only 100 people complain or 1,000 people complain, then we can really reduce the amount of workload we're doing. Because I haven't had 100 people complain to me about breeding and fox chasing and hounds and stuff, so we can eliminate that discussion. I've had many people contact me in these two communities that are very concerned. They're people that I went to school with their kids and stuff. But to me, I don't think it's right to say, unless it's a certain number, it's an entire community that's concerned about it. And it doesn't matter whether that community is made up of 25 people or 1,000 people. It's a legitimate concern, and it's something that they don't know about when they go and they buy it. And we end up possibly having a thing where we can pit one neighbor against the other just because they know they can. And it's not anything that's abusive to the other side. So I'm just a little concerned that now all of a sudden, because it's not, it's only two communities, then those two communities basically don't count for the discussion. That's upsetting to me.
All right, Tia?
I was just going to ask, is there any notice given anywhere for something like this to somebody who's buying, say, a house at the back of a floodplain?
The floodplain's on their plat.
So they know. They have to know to go look at their plat when they buy the house, but see that that's denoted and to see that this is how that, like, putting a place that would be regulated.
Any regulation.
But they don't have regulations on their plats and their surveys when they buy a house. Can you set the census table?
You have setbacks.
But
yeah.
It doesn't say
you have to beware when you buy a property. Right. Let's be realistic. You have to know your property, what you're buying, and know what you can and can't do on your property. You couldn't go in and build, you know, McDonald's in somewhere that's not zoned commercial. Like, if you buy a property, you need to know as a buyer what you're purchasing.
And I would say,
and your number is what?
I mean, that's, we get questions all the time from people. I'm looking to buy this property. What can I do?
I would say too that
floodplain is not even the, like, as crazy as it sounds. A lot of times floodplain isn't even like the hot, like the, it's the least common denominator. There are so many other factors that people run into that, like, floodplain is the sometimes the lowest concern because of setbacks.
I was just going to say, just again, back to Broadlawn Farms. I mean, if you're one of these properties that actually is really affected by this, and you buy your property, you are aware that you are buying a plane just because of the plane insurance and stuff like that that doesn't typically apply to other properties on the land again.
Rich?
Isn't this already covered in the incidental structures under 600 square feet? Do we need no rise if you're permitted under 600 square feet? Are we having the discussion about something like you're talking about adding this language, but we already have the language structure. So I'm not sure actually what we're talking
about. The accessory structures are for permitted uses. So for rec, for ag, for anything that's already permitted. It is not miscellaneous accessory structures. It's for accessory structures that are associated with a permitted use. So this would be adding accessory structures associated with residential. Which is not already a
understood.
Okay, so I'm going to go back to the question. Do we want staff to bring back language to this to you?
It is.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Bring language back, staff.
Okay.
Next.
All right, now we're going to talk about active recreation in the family.
5 minutes down. No, just do your presentation.
We get this?
No. Nope. Oh, send something.
One in the back.
We have this for Westerland, the slideshow we got.
Oh, that's
right. We didn't get the one for this one. Okay.
We can send it out after.
All right, so just a little bit of background. We're going to run through this quick so that it can inform the discussion that we have about active rec. So as you can see here, we've got just your basic definition of a floodplain. So it's any land susceptible to being inundated by water from any source. We regulate the development to prevent loss of life and property. We've talked about that a little bit here in this committee, and also to prevent the creation of health and safety hazards. So as a secondary benefit, you know, you have the natural function, which is to store, convey, and reduce the speed of the floodwaters. Okay, so in Loudoun County, we regulate two different floodplains. So we have major and minor floodplain. Our discussion for active rec is focused on the major floodplain. So this corresponds with the FEMA special flood hazard area, which is considered high risk floodplain. It has a 1% chance of being exceeded or equal in any given year. So it's a misnomer that it happens every 100 years. It actually happens more frequently than that or less frequently than that. It's all just the mean. So, but that is the average chance. So for the purposes of Loudoun, we regulate major floodplain as anything that drains greater than 640 acres. All right, and then, so this active rec discussion also involves our river and stream portal resources. This comprises the floodplain and also adjacent steep slopes. And then you have a 50-foot buffer width and then a variable buffer width as well.
So 50 foot is B in this, and the variables A?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, so the purpose of RISCR is to maintain a healthy stream corridor. So it is not a life and safety measure. It is a natural resource measure. It provides, you know, the benefits for the area as well as providing opportunities for passive recreation. Currently, active rec is not permitted in the RISCR. And that is because of the disturbance to the habitat, and it reduces the buffer area between the water and the pollutant source. Okay, and then just to make sure we are all on the same page, we have the definitions of active and passive recreation. So you can see that active rec is usually formal, often requiring equipment and taking place at, you know, sites or fields. And then you have passive recreation, which is, you know, doesn't require anything formal. So it's paths, trails, things like that, things with fewer impacts on the surrounding areas. So the discussion we are having is specifically about whether or not we will allow active recreation in the major floodplain. Passive recreation will continue to be permitted. So then we have a couple of examples just so we can have a sense. So you've got for passive walking paths, boardwalk trails, picnicking, and associated parking areas. Active is ball fields, concession stands, impervious courts, golf courses, playgrounds, and hot dogs.
Define boardwalks.
I think they're considered impervious, and it's actual boardwalks.
So it can be asphalted or it cannot be asphalted? Or
cannot be asphalted.
But it can be wood?
Yes, I believe so. Because that's considered obvious.
Clarify something. Passive requires the associated parking, but active does not require parking. Am I correct on that?
Sorry, can you repeat the question?
Passive requires associated parking. Active does not.
Wow.
Correct?
No, it's not cumulative.
Loud.
Say that again, please.
It's not cumulative. It's not, well, and. It's
or.
Like you can have.
I'm not putting parking. Does active require parking?
Yeah, yes. I think maybe what you're just missing off the list is examples of, you know, passive and active. And if there's associated parking with that active recreation, if you're allowing active recreation, you're going to be allowing that associated parking as well.
Okay, so that's what I'm, so Ryan, so both of them allow parking, associated parking.
Well, here's a question. Allowing or requiring? One's permissive, one's required. So if you did a baseball field, would you be required to build the parking?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
It would not be required to have it in the floodplain.
No, I get that, but it could be in the floodplain. Right. It could be in the floodplain.
You gotta have parking.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Well, on passive, you can have the associated parking.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's
the floodplain.
In passive, you are can put it the parking in the floodplain, right?
Yes, correct.
And so in active, you can put it in the floodplain, is the question.
If it became a permitted use, then yeah, that parking
is not, it's not on the active side is the point,
but it should, but it could be,
right.
It could be,
it could be on the right side.
Both of them can have parking.
Yes.
Yes.
Correct.
Okay, so the reason this is coming up is because of the comprehensive plan language. So we added it here. Talks about the permitted uses in Risker. So the, I think, so the comprehensive plan language has it so that we are limiting new uses to for active recreation in the minor floodplain for river and stream corridor only. So it's not specifically saying that active rec is not permitted in major floodplain. However, because of how the Risker language is written, it is excluding active rec from major floodplain.
So it's not allowed. You said on one hand it was allowed, but then on the other hand you said it wasn't allowed, so it's not allowed, right?
So yes, it's not. That is what we are talking about here, is there is currently a discrepancy. Active rec currently under the zoning ordinance is allowed in major floodplain. However, how it is written, as you can see here, active recreation is permitted in the risk or buffer area associated with minor floodplain only. So we have a conflict. And that is what we are trying to resolve, is the conflict. So we have a little bit of history here just to give a sense of what we're looking at. So we have a couple of slides with a few tables. So on the left side, you'll have the zoning ordinance, and on the right side, you will have the general plan information. So in the 93 revised zoning ordinance, you had language for the floodplain, which was public and private recreational uses, which did allow includes golf courses, hiking trails, playfields. So under the 93 ZOAM you listed there, those uses were allowed in the major floodplain. And then you have the pre-2019 general plan, and it had the uses in the RISCOD, which is the River and Stream Corridor Overlay District, which is then replaced with Risker. And that had, that's the 2004 CPAM. And so in 2004, the general plan was revised and it only allowed active recreation in minor floodplain associated with that RISCOD. And they did allow golf courses with special exception. And then we have what is currently written. And so in 2015, we had a ZOAM that revised the floodplain overlay district. And the language is as simple as passive and active recreation uses, except swimming pools. So it doesn't list out anything in detail, just active rec. And then the 2019 comprehensive plan continued what the 2004 CPAM started, which was recreation within minor floodplain, river and stream corridor resource only. And then we have the proposed floodplain language is that recreation passive would be in both major and minor, and recreation active would only be permitted in minor floodplain to be consistent with the language that's been in place in the general plan since 2004. So the issues, as I mentioned, is that we have a discrepancy between our zoning ordinance and the comprehensive plan. And as it stands, active rec uses can be developed on either side of the risk limits. And that just pushes active rec closer to the water, which is counterintuitive for what the risk purpose is. So this is a visual so you can get a sense of kind of what we're talking about. So you can see you've got the Risker minimum width, which is the closest to the stream. Active rec is not allowed per the Chapter 6 Risker regulations. And then you've got just outside of that, you have your active rec that is allowed per the major floodplain, but that area is also within the Risker buffer area where floodplain and active rec is not allowed. So that is the area we're talking about, the area of conflict. And then you have outside of it, you have your general development area where active rec is allowed, provided it's allowed under the underlying district as well. I guess that's the caveat. All of this is also contingent on any other requirements besides risk or in floodplain. So these are the three options that staff has discussed and is presenting. So you have your option one, which is to remove active rec from Maple Floodplain as a permitted use. Any existing or proposed parks will be considered non-conforming. And then you have option two, which is your revised
so common.
Will not be considered non-conforming. The option two is that you will revise the comprehensive plan and chapter six of the zoning ordinance to allow active rec in the risk garden. And then active rec will continue to be a permitted use in the major floodplain. And then finally, we are proposing that you could allow active rec in risk or major floodplain through a minor special exception for certain active recreation uses. So it wouldn't be all active rec, it would be whatever uses are discussed and agreed upon. And our recommendation is option one, which would bring everything into agreement with each other.
Right. I'd like to add something. Can you go back to the slide with the 2015 zoom in on it too? So I just wanted to clarify something on there. The slide makes it look like it's just a straight out permitted use, but there are caveats, conditions tied to it.
There's impervious area limitation.
Well, that no rise in base flood application.
Except you have to have a quote mark.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you have to do that. And then I think 2 years later, we also changed it and you couldn't have any change in the boundaries.
So boundary change is the special exception. So you have to have a special exception, I think, for a boundary change. Here, I have it up right now. Where's specs? So for a special exception is required for both passive and active recreation uses, where the impervious area exceeds 3% of the area in major floodplain, and if there is a increase in the base flood elevation, as well as change in the boundary. So yeah, that's the development standards that's referenced here. There are some use development specific things that are assessed for passive and active rec. Jason is correct. It's not just a straight, you can do it. There are some limitations and requirements in addition to.
Yeah, these are existing already too.
Correct. Yes, and that is existing. That is how we do it now.
Can you go to your three options? I think somebody, I don't remember who did, but said, did you mean to have the word not in there?
Yeah.
Not be considered non-conforming? How do we have it so that...
Like a double negative.
Well,
no, say be considered conforming.
Differently, if we... Yeah. Right.
Be considered
technically conforming. But I, wait.
Yeah.
No. Can I ask my question?
Let me ask my question.
My question is... If I've got a use that was permitted by the zoning ordinance today and we change the zoning ordinance so that the district to which it's zoned does no longer permits that use, generally that use becomes non-conforming. So I'm just confused as to how we can create a circumstance with a change to the ordinance that removes active rec as a permitted use in the major floodplain. I think once we do that, it automatically becomes a non-conforming use. But tell me if I'm wrong, because I'm not, because you were certain about this language. So I don't.
Colleen's got a great point. Normally, when something becomes non-conforming, it could stay, but the non-conformance cannot increase in size or scope or whatever. What you guys are saying is, if there's a ball field in the floodplain and it now becomes, you know, you can't do it anymore, we could add 10 more ball fields and that's okay because it's still considered a conforming use. I don't think that's what we want to say.
Well, I just want to first ask the question. Let's just take it step by step.
So who wants that
one? I mean, RISCR language, this comes from RISCR language, and RISCR currently has language in there that talks about, someone over here said it, like you can't increase a certain footprint, but you can continue, okay. So the RISCR language is existing structures within RISCR buffer area are not considered non-conforming. However, additions must not increase the total footprint of the structures by more than 25% and are subject to certain standards. So that is the language.
But you can increase it by 25%.
Correct.
But that's, so that applies to the risk of not necessarily the floodplain change.
And the same language.
Risk.
Yes.
Yeah,
okay.
Consider risk.
Let me just, how about I give a sense of what we're trying to do here?
Yep.
We don't want to have existing or proposed parks have to go, like, we would, if you want to change your baseball field to a soccer field, we would like for that to still be a possibility without making it a huge pain. So that is what we're trying to facilitate. We are not trying to, because I think if it becomes non-conforming, that requires all kinds of things. And we don't necessarily want to suddenly make this crazy restrictive for existing.
And so you have the option of increasing it up to 25%.
That's for the risk.
That's for the risk. I'm not saying we're doing this
quickly, but that's kind of what we're building on.
That's super helpful context.
Can I ask a follow-up to that? How are you treating like a master planned county park that is not fully built yet?
It is
proposed.
Proposed. We haven't quite figured that out yet. There was some discussion of like if there is some application, if it exists somewhere formally, then that might be what we're looking at.
Because I'm looking at like Mark Novak right now, like Bless Park.
We have had discussion. We have been in discussion with Parks and Rec about this, and we will continue to work with them should we need to make any kind of language about it. So yes, that did come up, was Bless Park, things like that. Like, I mean, you've got Potomac Lakes. Like, we are aware there are like a handful. I believe there are actually only 8 fields that are actually, you know, in the floodplain for Parks and Rec, but we are aware of that limitation.
And Bill, to what you just asked, I think most county parks, so we're dealing with this kind of in Walrus too, the ZOEM, it came up because there is overlap between active rec and a park. I think most parks require special exception approval. And so at some point, the fact that you've got special exception approval for your park starts, I guess, overlapping or overriding active rec as a standalone principal use. I mean, I think active rec is a principal use of more something, at least in our discussions, it's like an HOA wants to, or, you know, it's a planned community and there's ball fields that are run by the HOA in open space parcel, as opposed to a county or school or NVRPA, Nova Parks type facility, which is more of a park. And whereas I wouldn't consider a lot of the HOA facilities to be parks. I think parks have kind of like a governmental connotation to them.
So public access.
Along those lines, I think that everybody's kind of pulling the threads on. Is it possible for us to understand what is in the pipeline? Looking at the floodplain so that we understand really what we're talking about, either through Parks and Rec, through NOVA, is there a listing of projects in wherever they are, to your point, if they are somewhere, is there a way for us to understand really what we're talking about from scope and impact?
I don't have the answer to that. I open the floor to someone. Yes.
I'm going to open the floor to them in a second. Dale? I'm sorry, Tia, you're next.
You too.
Yeah.
I'm still trying to understand what's the problem we're trying to fix. I mean, I've been around this county, I think, just as long as anybody sitting at this table and sitting on the back wall. And I've probably played baseball, softball, soccer, and others, and Special Olympics in probably just about every end of this county. What is it that is broken on these parks that we feel are endangering the natural resources that we now need to do this? I mean, we just had this discussion about why are we talking about, Price Club swing sets in the floodplain for Potomac Farms if there's nothing we're trying to do. I mean, when I look at all the golf courses that are here today that could be affected, I mean, everything from Stoneley to 1757 to Brambleton to all the way down to Algonquian. When I look at all the money we've spent on the different parks throughout this county and even the HOA parks, what is it we are trying to say is the problem that we think we need to fix?
It is a natural. The risker was created for a certain purpose, and allowing active rec negates that purpose.
And what harm has been done? What ball field, what golf course that we have today has damaged
anything that we know that's documented while we're doing this.
How many streams in Loudoun are impaired?
Yeah.
Significant streams in Loudoun are because of runoff from things like that.
Because of what golf course? Because of what park? I mean, it's easy to make a general statement to say, I mean, the minute somebody puts another well in, you can say it does it. The minute somebody puts in another sewer system, you could say it does it. I'm asking for the imperial information that says the 1757 golf course dammed up seven.
That's not the way it works. It's cumulative over decades.
But I'm
there's no one golf course.
Where is that information that shows what we've done? Where is it?
The number of impaired streams in Loudoun.
There you go, right there.
But how do you know it's all because of the parks or it's all?
You will either trust the data or you'll not want to. Colleen just mentioned an example of where this runoff is causing damage.
Wait,
you can read it or not.
How many, what did I say?
Yeah. Who was it? Was it Tia?
Whoa. Stop.
There's a question.
You have a list of impaired streams, correct?
A list exists.
I mean,
a list exists that you could provide. Is there any analysis on why the cause of the impairment of the stream, other than general development?
I'm just going to go out and say probably not, because what we have here is source pollution versus non-point source
pollution. I understand that.
Source pollution, a finite, defined, there's your pipe, there's your source of the pollution. Yes. Non-point source pollution is a result of what all we do on the land that ends up in the stream.
Totally get it. I just wanted to answer the question. That's all I was going to do. Tia?
I had accumulated a couple of questions. My first is, within the ability to expand 25%, is there a possible, there's a distinct difference between something like a ball field, like baseball, where you're talking about filled and has to be maintained, probably a great expense by the park system, versus something like a soccer field, non-turf, that is just grass that's been painted. Is it possible to get that granular in what they're permitted to expand in terms of costing the county money, in terms of something that has to be maintained with a lot of effort, versus expanding something like a parking lot that's going to increase the amount of runoff going into these streams, or expanding something like a baseball field, but then fill that's going to get washed away into the streams? So that's one question.
Do you want an answer?
Sure. Go ahead. That one first. I'll find the other one.
Cindy, I don't know if you're the most appropriate person to answer.
Throw it to you. Legal question. You want to throw it back?
We could regulate. I think you're asking about construction.
You could make a distinction in wood grass.
No, it's where you're not in
Right. That's the answer. Yeah. That's the answer. Hold on.
Okay.
Go ahead, Tia.
And then just a general statement that this is always what comes up in these conversations about, well, we're going to put all of these things now in nonconformance. Just because we've made mistakes in the past and done things that have harmed our waterways does not actually mean we have to continue those mistakes. There are plenty of methods within urban planning to do grandfathering, to say, you know, we can accommodate this use that does exist, this business that is running as a golf course, without saying we have to continue to allow that mistake to be made into the future.
Bill?
I just wanted to add on to material choices. Mm-hmm. Whether or not the zoning ordinance prohibits like artificial turf or not doesn't matter, because no one will construct artificial turf in the floodplain because it gets washed away.
Right.
That makes sense.
And so as a business practice, that never happens.
Good.
Sure. The other thing I wanted to ask just about the HOA discussion was, say, like a rezoning, a proper zoning for residential has like certain active rec facilities shown on like its concept plan, but they haven't been built yet. Are we saying that that's protected too? And you don't have to answer me now, but I want to make sure that whatever language gets crafted considers those such things too.
Yes.
Well,
and I think that gets back to the question of a list, which we've not closed yet. So I know you're going to.
I can let Steve, I guess, speak to if there's anything from Parks and Rec.
I just want to get questions out. Okay. So questions?
Yes. How are you defining 25% increase? If you've got 10 ball fields, does that mean you can have and 2.5? Or so is it per 25 acres?
Is not necessarily a number we're considering. I think we're like that's currently in like the risker language for houses. Like if a house is in, like that's for structures. So the 25 is, this may have caused some confusion. We're trying to, similar to risker, have some sort of rules for non-conforming. What those rules are, we haven't really talked about because we don't know if that's the direction we're going in.
Oh.
Yeah.
We good on questions?
No.
No more.
Okay. I'm gonna get the name wrong. How does anything in what we're proposing conflict with the Emerald Ribbons thing about all the waterways around the county that the board has embraced and implemented in, I can't remember what it's called? Yeah.
So I think we have an expert in the room on that.
I didn't want us to make it split and that bumps into that.
If I want to get questions out,
yeah.
I want to let Parks and Rec, I want to let Parks and Rec have the floor to talk. And then what I'd like to do is ignore Jason for a second.
So my last question.
I want to go back to the option sheet.
Yeah.
I want to see if the ZOC wants to add any other options, then I want to vote on the options.
Okay.
So are we going to have any discussion?
Yeah. I don't have questions, but I have discussion.
I just want Parks and Recs to weigh in. I wanted to go questions, Parks and Rec, discussion. Okay.
So the only other question I had was, how is camping defined? Is that a passive or an active?
I am looking to DPC for that. I believe so.
Dave's on it. He'll answer that question.
I mean, it's like trails and walking around, which is all great stuff. So if someone wants to camp overnight in a tent, how is that considered?
I think that's my personal thing. That would be like a temporary use. We're talking about popping up a tent for the night. I think where you start now into...
Is it an active or a passive recreational thing on public land?
Well, I think it depends. I mean, you know, if all I'm doing is popping up a tent, moving some stones, making a fire, that's probably more along the lines of passive. If I start getting into some of these things I've seen, you know, like along the Appalachian Trail where you have pre-constructed shelters, fire pits, and, you know, it's like a campground.
Yeah, I'm not talking about that.
I think that's starting to get more towards the active.
Yes. All right.
Let's
talk.
This was just to answer that. I'm working in another county that is actually redoing their camping ordinance right now, and they're actually dragging and dragging out because of the is it active or is it passive, and how do you regulate that? So it's not straightforward. The answer on that.
Okay. Which one of you would like to?
I'll start with the question of private So it's Steve Torpy, director with Loudoun County Parks Recreation Community Services. To answer the question about parks that are in the pipeline, we do have the Western Loudoun Recreation Complex where the Western Recreation Center is going, and there is a park that is being developed around there on the edge of Percival. And then the Dulles South Community Park, which is right adjacent to Lightridge High School. Those are the only two active ones that we have in the pipeline. Now, we do have a lot, like we're frankly, Northwest is just going through a process for trades. We do have a lot of parks that are called for in the CNA, but currently we don't have any other additional projects that are currently in the adopted CIP. So just to give you an idea of
that's a six-year CIP.
Six-year CIP, that's correct. With regards to the Loudoun Trails and Waterways, or plenty of parks and trails, as a lot of people still know it as, we've had a lot of conversations surrounding that to make sure that what is being proposed does not impact our ability to continue to put trails, because that initiative, that plan that was adopted by the board, when you look at it, a lot of it is in Stream Valley Corridors. Yeah. And so ensuring that there is appropriate associated with the passive recreation and those needs is in there so that we are able to continue to do that and implement that program throughout the county.
Any questions for Parks and Rec?
I did.
Go ahead.
The trails that you guys are looking at, Steve, that are, I know, like you talked about down along the Duncan into the Sugar Land Run area and stuff like that.
Yes.
Those looking at that they're going to make some type of, and not just those, but the trail system you're trying to connect, are going to try to have to meet some kind of ADA requirement? I mean, they're not going to just be chips and wood, right?
So they are natural surface trails, and there are certain things that we can use with natural surface that does meet some ADA requirements, but not all of the trails, not 100% of that trail system obviously in a natural surface state would be ADA.
But there will be some kind of impervious surface associated with creating these trail systems. It's not going to be just grass and green and no system going through it.
The plan does call for connections where we can't put trails in, like to some existing sidewalks or multi-use trails. But anything that we are putting in is for natural surface, intent for natural surface.
And then as it relates to like even ball fields and soccer fields, I mean, not all ball fields and soccer fields in Loudoun County, especially more western Old Loudoun, are necessarily owned by Parks and Rec, correct? I mean, you've got the Dulles one out there on 50, you've still got, you've got several, and then you've got HOAs that are still running, they're owning some of the ball fields, isn't that?
There are some HOAs that have recreation areas. I'm not sure how they actually call them, but they do have, yes, they do have some areas that are used primarily for soccer.
I was going to say, soccer's a big thing, I know.
Correct. And then there are a few leagues that have privately owned ball fields. Lower Loudoun League is one. There is one in Central Loudoun here in Leesburg. The one down off of 50, the Lions, yep. That's no longer in use. That property did sell, so the Dulles or Loudoun South is no longer using. But there are a few scattered around again.
And then the most of these, there's no kind of, when people keep talking about huge maintenance and stuff, I mean, it's really, depending on whether it's baseball or softball, it's a dirt infield with grass that's mowed. It's not where we're looking at doing turf and stuff like that, like you talk about when you get, even your regional ones, like your Algonquin, and a lot of them aren't turfed or anything. I mean, they're maintained, but they're not what some people would say are eroded.
So there is a term management plan we have for all of our ball fields, and we have a tiered system, priority 1, 2, 3, and 4, with 4 being elementary school sites. Obviously, priority ones have the highest level because those are the ones that are the highest use fields, and those are typically at our lighted park sites. There was some comments about the variation of maintenance on baseball and soccer fields. And that's true. There is a different level. But to say that there is not a lot of maintenance needed for the soccer field, and the rectangle sports are the ones that are growing in the county. And you know, we like to joke internally that grass grows by the inch but dies by the foot because of the amount of foot traffic that you have on rectangle fields. It does require quite a bit of maintenance.
Bill? Appreciate the list of like the pending projects. I just wanted to confirm, I think there's another RFP out for the LPAT as well as the Sterling Park, which has a floodplain impact as well. So I just wanted to think the list is a little bit bigger.
So the Sterling one, we're still working on finding where that's going to be.
Right.
So there's not really anything that I can say.
Okay. I guess my point is that there are other possibilities, other plans, you know, that this isn't just 2 or 3 projects that we're trying to salvage.
I love that statement, grows by the inch, thrice by the foot, it applies to farming too, with park grass. I am just curious, when you're talking about a soccer field that is in a floodplain that's going to get washed more often, I mean, I have kids in soccer, yes, eventually. But those fields get shut down a lot more often and aren't allowed to be played on games that can't because they get flooded. And if you put kids on them when they are wet and flooded, they get degraded much faster. Is that accurate? From a parent's perspective, it certainly seems accurate.
So I don't want to state something without having the actual cancellation data of this field versus that field.
Sure.
It is true that, you know, on a soccer field, you don't have the ability to go in and do something to open that field after heavy rains like you do on a baseball softball field. But I would pause on saying that this field is done more than that, well, without opening that field. I'm sorry.
Question of timing. We have 8 minutes left in the meeting, is that correct?
No, we have 38 minutes left.
We're going to
11 o'clock. It's 9 to 11.
I retract my question.
Any other questions for Parks and Rec?
Is it a motion for a stretch break?
No. Speaking from your all's perspective only, Parks and Rec, which option do you want? All right.
One.
Parks and Rec. Okay, so before we get to discussion, is the ZAL comfortable that these are the three options we're going to consider? Or does anybody want to put something on the table before we have our discussions? Is another option.
I want to say something.
Before we put something on the table? Or?
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead.
Just real quick, and I'm rehashing something that's been mentioned at a previous meeting. My apologies, but I've just listened to the discussion. I think we're also starting to debate policy. The policy has been set by the Board of Supervisors in the general plan. That kind of ties staff hands. It's the direction we can go. We can either implement it or we cannot implement it. I would not recommend that we do anything, at least on the staff's part, that goes against the policy the board set previously, unless the board goes and changes that policy first.
And that will be the discussion October 2nd of what the board wants to do.
And then, sir, and having said that, I also think some of these options are loosely worded. As Maggie described, there are, whatever the choice is, I do not recommend, from at least from the county side, relaxing the standards beyond what is currently the status quo for active vertical.
And in support of what Jason just said, I would go back to page 28 in the packet, where the ZOT bylaws provide guidance on this committee's review of draft text, and it includes correcting errors and inconsistencies, addressing specific issues, identifying when proposed ordinance are inconsistent with comprehensive plan. So again, it's not opinion, it's what we are supposed to be doing according to bylaws.
I don't think ZOC is banned from asking for consideration of policy. Now, I don't want to go down that rabbit hole. Trust me. I do not want to go down that rabbit hole. But
in general.
In general, right? In general, I mean, we are an input on policy group, I would say. And I think when it gets to the board level, there'll be some different discussions than we're going to have here. I think this is kind of about policy as the policy, and these are the options, and how do we feel about the options? So
true.
Hold on, staff first.
Before we start open the session, I just wanted to mention two things. So if we want to finish questions again.
You have a question or you want to start debating?
Well, I wanted to just remark on the comments that's made about the general plan and that appropriation. That is in front of the Planning Commission, if you remember. We're reviewing the general plan right now. I brought it up, and it is on our work agenda. So to say that we're in conflict, or that we need the board to tell us they want us to look at the general plan use of active recreation, it's already there. We put it already on our agenda, and it's going to be talked again this month. So it already is a discussion. The whole idea, and then I brought it over to this side too, was if we're going to have a discussion on the general plan side, it needs to be done holistically, not let's do the general plan at one point and then let's do the zoning ordinance and everything at another. It needed to be a holistic look to decide if we think this makes sense, then let's make sure the two of them are together. So there, it's not one or the other, and it was brought up and it is on our agenda. So to say that we're violating some kind of bylaws or grit policy, it's just not part of where the process is, where we're at today. Look at the Planning Commission agenda, you'll see it is on our agenda for our work session this month. So it is there already, and we are having a discussion about active recreation in the floodplain as well as the general plan.
Yeah.
So just two things before we go into discussion, just based on what we've kind of had a conversation about. It is also not just about points like there's golf courses in the floodplain, point sources, pollution like that. By allowing uses and development in the floodplain, you are also, or in the risker, you are removing the means by which to filter out. So it's not just a matter of adding pollutants, it's eliminating an ability to filter out pollutants that are not in floodplain. So anything that's running off from anywhere, any development, is losing that filter area. So that it is adding to the impairment of the stream. So it is not necessarily like, I mean, it is partly that you're adding a pollutant source, but also you are removing the ability to filter out other pollutant sources.
All right, I've got one.
Yeah, I got a point.
Well, you have a second.
And the second thing
you got to get to number two
is also, you know, we are discussing this currently allow active rec. I will say a lot of times people avoid putting active rec in the floodplain. We have parks come up and specifically fields and things are designed outside of the floodplain. So already it is a practice to keep those things outside. Now, in areas like Algonquin or West Park, where it's harder to keep things out of the floodplain, that is where we are seeing special exceptions, the requests dealing with floodplain. Is already established parks from bygone eras before. So I just wanted to put that out there that we're not, I think it was mentioned, kind of with the act or the residential uses, we're not getting hordes of people coming in every day saying, I want to put my ball field in the floodplain, or not even demanding to do it, but people don't come in and talk to me about, like, I'm doing this design, ball fields going in. Those are very few of the floodplain applications that we actually is recreation.
And thank you. And I appreciate the options. I think that's great to see and change their thinking. Just to frame, can you help me understand why you would lean in on option one versus, say, option three?
Option one is the one that we find to be the best and the most comprehensive that solves all the problems. I mean, option three does then allow kind of to, it allows that some active running floodplain, if you are still eliminating some of that buffer area, and it does require, I believe it'll require revision to both the comprehensive plan and chapter six.
So what I would say though is three also is, well, I don't know about the RCR, but three is kind of the status quo. Well, it's not. It's a relaxing of the status quo because right now, 95-99% of your active rec in the floodplain, major floodplain, is going to require full special exception approval. Just because you can't do it without, I mean, unless maybe to excavate to make some BFE level field.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point, Jason. So we have at the maximum impervious area that you can have in the major floodplain is 3%. For active rec and most active rec, because that's inclusive of everything. So any impervious buildings, fields, things like that, all account to that 3%. Most large scale parks and things are going into that special exception. Very rarely are we getting active rec that does not exceed that 3% threshold.
Or cause or rise or a change.
So Jason is correct. So for the I like to call it out when it happens.
Hey, yes.
So like the applications that we do get are small, and then even smaller are applications that just go right through without specs.
But candidly, the reality is three gives you a path to evaluate and saying that instead of one is saying that
as a blanket
net, where there could be some worthy things that deserve some consideration in a legislative process that three gives you. I don't know, when you say it's less rigid than today, I don't know.
It's a minor special exception.
As opposed to like
full specs.
But it's still minor.
And that's regarding full plan. The RCR might have to be revised. No, it doesn't.
It would not allowed in Fisker at all.
So it would need to be. We would still have to option the items in option two would still most likely need to go into option three. There would still be several. We would need a CPAM. We would need to open up another ZOAM. There would be additional administrative steps to implement option three as well.
So should option three be allow a legislative process to evaluate uses in a floodplain?
Well, yeah.
Could it be as simple as that?
Or three before seven.
So option two, there would be, so anything, it would be blanket allowing active rec in Risker. and continuing the same requirements that are existing for Flood Plain.
But that takes a legislative act also. I'm saying, yes, if there is a legislative, unless you go with one or two or three, you've got a process associated with it.
Right. So there would be one legislative process that would happen through that staff. Option three would be a legislative process each time someone wanted to.
Yeah.
Okay. Who else?
I would just say, so it's a combination to me of option two and three, if you are to allow it.
Right.
The CPAN, ZOAM to allow, or to have it mirror, I would say, higher than what the current law requirements are for active rec, which is pretty tight on special exception.
Bill?
I just wanted to make a point of clarification that when you do make an impact to the RISC-R, you are required to reforest and mitigate those impacts by policy. So to say that you're tearing down trees and then putting in a source, you're offsetting it with the additional mitigation.
You tear down a huge tree and you put in a stick, it doesn't.
Every single time there's the argument of how much dirt that tree needs to actually grow to be a huge tree, and that argument is usually lost. So no, it's not a one-to-one replacement. And it takes 30 years to get to that point.
That's parking lot.
Yeah, it's parking lot.
Okay. Anybody else on the floor?
Can we talk also on two? It's also a legislative act that would be required, but could we also put in there that the agreed upon active recreation would be agreed upon during that process also? So if there's certain things that we look at to say these aren't appropriate active recreations, they wouldn't be allowed. So it's not necessarily you're blanketing everything. So we give, because no matter what we do, if we're not doing one, we're doing two or three, either one of them starts the beginning of a legislative act. So with that legislative act, you could also include a review of what do you agree should be those called active recreation. Because when we looked at that list they had, it was kind of like vanilla, didn't really say anything, but we could actually, part of the process, say we want to also look at what would we call active recreation in this area as part of what we were reviewing during this legislative time. And that, and I just want to make sure, so it's only the zoning ordinance and only the comprehensive plan that we're talking about legislating that. There's no FSM or anything else that we need to include in these options when we're looking at them. I'm just trying to make sure.
No, the FSM is the time.
Relative,
the
they're nothing, any place, it's just these two. And I understand from, it's hard to call you Mr. Torpy after all these years, but I understand Mr. Torpy's point of view too, because I mean, the reality of it is the parks they're doing all have applications in them, so they don't have to worry about being declared non-conforming, they're protected. So I would, if I was on the county side, I would also pick option one because it protects me. My concern is that it doesn't go so far as that it protects the people that aren't parks and recs, and it's the HOAs and the others that their ball fields and their soccer fields may not be on any plan, because what their HOA docs show is it's a green space. They just use it for soccer, or they use it for baseball. So my concern is that while we're having a lot of protection for the county, we're not providing the same protection for those things that aren't necessary. And I'm an example, but it's, we're not allowing necessarily the same protection for those things that aren't county owned. So with that being said, I would like to make a motion that we.
Oh, it's not a no, too early for motion.
Wait a minute.
So can I
do a motion?
Wait, we did in discussion or are we still moving?
We're in discussion.
Okay. There's no motion, Jack. We're in discussion.
I want to make a really quick comment on what Dale said there. If you're just zoning something as open space, it's still going to be zoned as open space. If little kids are taking soccer goals down there and playing soccer, We're not taking kids' soccer goals away.
Well, until so
it's just
if it's
just
like the points.
Because you're not building permanent structures down there. If kids are going out to play in a field, they're going out to play in a field. They can play in a field all they want.
That's active recreation with equipment.
But it's not zoned as active recreation. It's just open space.
It's civic space sometimes. But I'm just saying,
it's not so.
In fact, we had this discussion already, yeah, where it said the minute you talk about using equipment, that goes to active recreation.
It's not zoned as active recreation. If kids are carrying down their little soccer goals and playing soccer in the field, that's fine.
So we don't hear that we have active recreation games going on in the floodplain.
They're gonna play wherever they wanna play.
I think we're getting hung up on the difference between activities and uses.
Yes.
And uses and being an established, something that's permitted there.
By location.
Yes, by location, where we're steering away from that, we're recommending away from that. The activities and kids playing and what they take down there, that being no permanent use, that's passive.
So base, if I take a baseball, if I take three bases and I take a bat and a ball and I go down and we play, we have a practice game for softball. That's not active recreation.
Are you clearing trees? Are you establishing backstops? Are you putting in dugouts?
So, but that's not passive recreation, because that's not what has been said in the past.
I'll give you an example. A few minutes ago, camping came up as a question. So Dave looked into it and reported to me. Here's how we deal with camping. If you're camping, as then you got a backpack, got your tent in it, and you set up in the floodplain, that's passive recreation. If you want a campground, that's a whole different thing. If we have standards, and you're going to have to show no rise, and that's the use. Because there's facilities, there's land disturbing activity, there's...
I don't think anybody's arguing that.
Yeah, and so that's the same idea that I think we're bringing here, the analogy that we're bringing to what kids do in certain areas beyond their house versus establishing that as a use.
Right. I'm just going to say this, and I just think ahead to the person who comes to the public hearing in 5 years and goes, so let me understand this. That's not a problem. What do I want to do is a problem. That's the part that starts to be, I get it. We're explaining it, the logic of it. I'm just putting myself in the, I'm not putting myself in the shoes of the person who's speaking in the public hearing, put myself in the front row, listening to the person speak at the public hearing. That's where I usually am. It does start to feel kind of just itchy to, like, that we've got like some of these distinctions. I'm not advocating for a change or anything, but maybe just give it some thought, because it does
fine.
So I think that many things that staff have said are important to consider. First of all, that we are really seeing applications to put a lot of ball fields in floodplains. That's the main thing that's the problem. And playing a game in an open space in an HOA is not the problem. This is about developing uses. Uses aren't the same as activities. Secondly, it's really important to recognize that things are changing. The climate is changing. We're having more flooding events and stronger rain events, which are creating problems in floodplains. People are seeing it all over the country, all over the world. This is not something that's getting better, that, oh, you put something there and you don't need to worry about it because things are improving. They're not, they're going the other direction. So why on earth would you put a facility that you have to maintain, that you have to spend money on, and taxpayers have to fund, in a place where you know you're going to have more damage? It just doesn't make sense. And if it's not a problem, why are we addressing it as if it is a problem? Because we're not seeing complaints, we're not seeing allocations. I just don't really understand. And the fact that the Parks and Recs Department has to go through a special exceptions process, well, great. They are thinking about those things. Are we going to have to spend extra money? Are we going to have to maintain these things? So to me, this is just a discussion that's wasting time, and that we should go for option one, because there's no good rationale to say that it's okay to cut down these areas that are protective of flooding from, not flooding, protective from pollutants coming from other areas, because we want to put play fields in that are going to be damaged. I mean, it's just not logical.
Anybody else?
Public safety is number one.
Yeah.
The only thing I would add is that there are a significant number of streams in Loudoun already impaired. So taking steps to increase that by either not filtering out pollutants, thank you, that's an excellent statement, or adding to pollutants is just, again, very irresponsible.
So, yeah, I do want to build on that, because our impaired streams, we have to do something about. We have to bring them back to non-impaired states. So you don't make it better by making it worse. You have to, then we're going to spend money as a county to improve what the damages that we're doing and have done for years and years. There is no way to determine, was this ball field adding X number of pollutants to the stream? You can't do that. It's just not even conceivable. So I think that it just doesn't make sense.
Okay. One last question.
Go ahead.
Ryan. So you're telling me that you wouldn't classify that active recreation. However, I look on the glossary of the general plan and it talks about open space active recreation, and the definition is areas dedicated to leisure time activities, usually of a formal nature and often perform with others, requiring equipment and taking place at sites or fields. Examples include ball fields, tennises, basketball, swimming, top slot golf courses, recreational sports, and games. So if I'm playing baseball and I'm down in there, that's an active recreation, where you just said it's not. But according to the general plan, it's an active recreation.
If that is set aside on the plans, you have to meet a certain need, and it shows this is where we're going to allow people to play baseball, then you're establishing that as a use, and we regulate that. If there's an open field the kids run out to with their pop-up soccer goals and play a game or throw out bases and a baseball bat and hit a softball, we can't regulate that. That's an open field.
All the HOAs have been through. They just designated as open space. They don't doesn't say this is that. It's just open space. Under this, then that's considered active recreation. That's what your rules say in the general plan. So you can't say it's not active recreation.
So I'm not using the open space as an example. Okay. I'm just talking about, you described an open field and kids run down there and play.
All right, but I'm describing the open space that's dedicated in all of these HOAs. They're not just a field that people's running onto. They've been dedicated through the HOA. So that is dedicated open space. So it's not just.
If it is dedicated open space, then it is subject to our standards and our rules.
Yeah. Would be after recreation.
Okay.
Michael.
Following up with Jim's passion. This is just a statement. I doubt that the 50-foot buffer does anything to repair or prevent, the kind of damage that we do, we cause. So maybe this is all, maybe it should be increased with incentives for people to develop, in that increased area. But this is for a different discussion. Future discussion.
So actually, there is one more thing that I neglected to say earlier, and that is what we are finding is that the FEMA floodplain maps are actually being determined to be inaccurate. They are not actually reflecting the amount of flooding that is happening, and there are more accurate assessments of floodplains. And because we're having increased flooding and with more often more flooding in broader areas, the 100-year floodplain isn't actually as accurate as it could be. And I know that is something that is being discussed as far as what are we going to do about this, because they're not showing the actual potential for damage.
Jim.
My general comment is these discussions always end up here, where one side digs in, and it always happens, and we end up, I don't understand why. I feel like some of these uses and some of these things can be not mutually exclusive, but can coexist together. And I think that we have in the county over the years created some marvelous amenities that benefit huge area of the population. Impaired streams are a fact, and to sit there and point it out, the fact that it's because of this ball field is kind of disingenuous. I feel like the impaired streams are a fact, and I'm not saying we don't do something about them, but to pinpoint it on the ball fields just as a disingenuous discussion, because agriculture, development, transportation have all contributed to those things happening. So it seems like it would be because of the amenity and everything that is provided to the county, it seems to be, I would think that we should strive for something that allows what's already there to coexist with us and be able to examine opportunities in the future that would allow it under certain circumstances. But to dig our heels in and say all for one and all for the other, just to me doesn't ever accomplish anything. So I would hope that we could try to ultimately recommend something to the board that would help them in their discussion so that we continue to build a great Loudoun County.
So I guess I'll wrap it up and say, you know, I come from the school of not giving people the opportunity to do creative things to make, to help and eliminate that makes no sense to me. Okay. And I think that the idea of having a legislative process that goes through certain criteria that are on the table to review when you do that is something that should always be available, because there's the opportunity to vote no on that at the end of the day. If staff is the happy, a good staff report, everybody, we all know what goes into that kind of stuff. So I personally struggle with one just saying, no, we're never doing anything. But certainly I agree a little bit with Joe that, you know, the diversity of this committee brings out the discussions that we're having. And this is what we love about this committee. And I think we get to a point sometimes where we're not the politicians. We just have to say, we got an issue. We've looked at it a couple of times. We're going to make a recommendation and pass it on. And then everybody's going to run to the next arena to start influencing what they want. And I think that's the reality of who we are. So I think with that, I'm going to do, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I just wanted to add, to give context, I mean, so this is, it is about floodplain and allowing active recreation floodplain. A lot of this, though, is based on allowing active recreation in the risker. So floodplain is life and property protection. Risker is environmental and like the environmental, like the risker was established for environmental protections. And it was established as far back as 2004. So this has been plan policy for 20 years at least. And I will also, just to Mr. Julie's point, agriculture does, they have exclusion fencing, they do plantings, they, like, there are some uses, like ag, that contribute to pollution. However, a lot of our things are agriculture trying to get better, prevent the pollution.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I appreciate that. I also think that the maintenance on fields that Parks and Rec does is far superior than it was ever, you know, shit 20 years ago or 30 years ago. So it's just everyone's trying to live with or do a good job.
That's it.
Trying to think how to say this. To go, when you're talking about bringing this back in front of the board, what you're often talking about is a staff presenting a special exception, lobbying the board for it, lobbying the staff for it behind the scenes, and the amount of work it takes to get the public even aware that it's happening, let alone in their sake, not an even playing field. So just say, I mean, I know it sounds great to say it's a legislative process and they'll be there to make the decision. It's not an even field. It's really hard to get the public engaged on something like polluting our waterways with another ball field being added. Like, it's very difficult to get them to come in and talk about that, even though it does deeply impact our county. So I don't want us to have this discussion assuming that it's in the playing field or something to be made as facts.
All right, Dale, last word.
Well, I wanted to actually give some suggestions on the alternative motion. Is this the time to please have people think about it or not?
Sure, go ahead.
If you look at option number two, it would be revised to start by saying to include a legislative project to revise the comprehensive plan in chapter six of the zoning ordinance. Two, include looking at the appropriate uses and specific performances in that regard to allow active recreation in a major floodplain.
Which you're actually saying, let's embark on an evaluative process before we recommend that this happen.
Right, and that's part of the, which would be part of the public process. And the reason why I do this is, now that I have survived, is I find out unless we expand this and say that the opportunity to look at uses and stuff, we're going to find out that we're going to get to public hearings and then we're going to be told that's beyond the scope of what was advertised. So that's why I want to include, to also include that we look at what we think are the appropriate active recreational uses. And then if there needs to be specific performances that are done at that same time, we have the ability to also do that during that time. So it gives everybody the opportunity to make suggestions about what does work, what doesn't work, and so that it's all or nothing, as Joe would say. Let's look at everything and let's make the best proposal.
Thanks, and one thing.
No, that needs a second.
A second.
Okay, go ahead.
So I think what I heard you say was you had mentioned just major floodplain, but I think we need to also talk about like what Maggie said about Risker, because right now.
I have Risker too. I meant to say Risker, active recreation and Risker. I was bringing that whole thing, so it wasn't taking it out, no.
The danger with this approach is it's really going to delay the process. It'll have to pull out, have a new comprehensive plan. It'll be prioritized with the board.
Hold on, this is only Zoc's recommendation.
Okay.
Work and do what they want. Is there any other discussion?
Discussion.
Go ahead.
That we've had multiple comprehensive plans for 20 years now that have studied this, reaffirmed it with properly circulated public input, the chance for people to really weigh in on it. I feel like that work has been done.
Okay.
Yes, there's already been a public input process that would be bypassed by doing it this way.
Okay. So I guess I'm going to call a vote for the motion. All in favor, raise your hand.
For the substitute.
For Dale's substitute motion.
Can we read the motion, please?
To initiate a legislative process to revise the comprehensive plan in Chapter 6 of the zoning ordinance to include looking at the appropriate uses and specific performances in that regard as it relates
standards.
To public standards. And performance standards as it relates to RISCOD and active recreation allowed in the major floodplain.
Not that.
And is that just a replacement for option two?
It's an expanded on it because
to approve that option, consider that option.
Consider
that
option one.
It's option four.
Before we vote on the other option.
Correct.
Okay.
It's a motion.
So the motion that's on the table is for us to add an option four.
Correct.
Perfect. Thank you.
All right. So all in favor, raise your hand. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. Okay, so it's eight yes, and I don't know how many people we have.
So just ask the nice raise your hand, and you'll know.
Everybody opposed it, raise your hand. One, two, three, four, five. It's an 8-5. I don't think there's any reason to discuss any other options. What? I voted. Why not vote on option one? Because we voted on the substitute motion. It's Robert's rules.
Yeah.
Hey, maybe I misunderstood. No. You voted to add a fourth option.
I thought the vote was
adding. That's what you said. You added a fourth option.
Now we start
to vote on the others.
That's fine. That's fine.
So that's now part of the option.
Okay, that's fine. Okay. Okay, let's go. We'll go down the list. All in favor of option one, raise your hand.
Wait a minute, it's not on the floor. It had to have a motion on the floor. The motion on the floor.
No, I think you'll want to say
I'll make a motion to add
as a fourth option.
But wait a minute. Mine was option four, which is my motion was not about putting it on the table.
I
You should go back to my main motion, which was option four.
Now.
We're going to extend, it's the same place, so I don't know. We can go through this, we're going to the same place. All right, all favor of option one, raise your hand. One, two, three, four, five, six. All opposed? One, two, three, four, five, six, seven. All right, all favor of option two, raise your hand. Get that. All favor of option three, raise your hand. All right, all favor of option four, raise your hand. Already done this. It's 8-5.
Now it lost one.
Hold on. Raise your hands.
In this occasion.
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine.
That's can't be right. I counted eight. Yeah.
Was it eight?
I counted eight.
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight.
Yeah.
So Zoc recommends option four to the board. All right, and now as we're out of town, I'm going to do one thing because everybody was here for Walrus. We think it's walking. So T and I have been talking about setting up an ad hoc committee to review Walrus stuff. And we'll send out an email. Whoever wants to be on that can get on that. And the Zoc will have an ad hoc committee that will review the Walrus stuff in between formal Zoc meetings. I appreciate everybody who spoke from the public. This will be on our agenda for the next 5 months. There'll be public input at the beginning. Walrus is going to go through here on a schedule. It's in our packet, and we'll just have to Judy decide how we bring in things that happen along the way after today.
How you do it? Pumping an ad hoc group.
What?
How are we going to do it?
We're sending an email out.
No. How will the voting be done with an ad hoc smaller version?
Recommendation to the board.
It'll be a recommendation to this committee.
Yeah. Have to be from the full body.
No, so, little one to make it to the full body.
Yeah, I think she's saying yes. The recommendation.
Right.
Mr. Chair, if I may, this was the point of order I wanted to bring up earlier. I do think that Ms. Fultman, Ms. Renshaw, Mr. Lovegrove brought up really good points, which is they were stakeholders that were participating in the process. Not Ms. Renshaw, she was referring to stakeholders that were participating in the process, specifically Stephen Bradshaw. One of the things that I think would be very important, no matter how this moves forward, is that the information from the stakeholder committees, tourism, business, preservation, and conservation, and residents, they all made public comments at the very beginning. Now, that doesn't mean that's where we end, but I think that that insight and that work that they put in would be important for the body as a whole to see. So if that is something that we can do, I think that would be very helpful. And then the other recommendation.
Just hold on, because I want to say. So one of the things that I was confused about and I want to understand, because I haven't been going to the stakeholder meeting, is that issues are raised, ELOC debates them, and I understand some are part and some staff are given direction. If I think this body needs ELOC input into park items, before they go down the path of evaluating things, he and I will ask for that.
And then my other part on that is we have two items that were put in the packet that actually are divided between multiple meetings. And taking it piecemeal to me is a bit of a challenge. So I think if that can address Ms. Renshaw's comments, I think it would be very important. And then my last one is addressing Ms. Fultman's comments, which is, you know, I think that if we can put into the process that this information goes back to those key stakeholders for reflection before it comes here, I think is important. And the reason being, they put a lot of time into their presentations. They were the ones at the table. So if we can try to figure out how to put that in, I think that the voice of the stakeholders, many of whom put in 20 plus hours, needs to be reflected in the packet, and we need to try to determine how to do so.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I think that's.
He and I talked about that.
Yeah.
Adding on to what Beth just said, I think I've attended every meeting, and I might have missed one, sitting in the gallery, but I do think it is really important because a lot of the stuff that's in here, and I've got all my notes, does not necessarily reflect the consensus of the actual stakeholders that said they were there, because staff did do presentations that the stakeholders didn't agree with. And I think it's important to also point out both sides when they're giving it to us to look at. And then there were some that were so, I don't know if the right word's controversial or what the right word should be, is that no consensus was reached and they were told it was going to be brought back to them. So I think it's also very important that when we're looking at these, if there's items that haven't been resolved, I don't think we should be looking at them yet. We should be waiting for the stakeholders and the TLUC to resolve the issues, because what I don't want to be is in the middle of something that they haven't resolved with the stakeholders, and then we're jumping in saying, this is the position we're taking.
And that's what I tried to say earlier. I think we need direction from TLUC to understand where that is. Not that we're going to agree with that, but I think that's an important component in
it. Brian, correct me if I'm wrong, but the drop tax is not only based upon the TLUC stakeholder meetings. It is also based upon the 4 years of input from the zoning ordinance rewrite.
That's right.
And that the stakeholder groupings, if we're only going to be using those voices, that of the four meetings we've had so far, when you look at the representation, it was supposed to be 33 to 33 to 33 to 33 to 33 to match the Kimley-Bourne summary that was done by the county. The actual percentages have been 54%, 30%, and 16%. So staff is doing the right thing by considering the stakeholder meetings, but not ignoring 4 years, because it needs to be more balanced than 54, 30, and 16.
Well, and if I may add to that, I'm not saying that it's exclusive of. I think including that information, I do think, is important.
I agree. Okay. Remember, next meeting is chair and vice chair elections. For this meeting, Tia and I said we would stay, but we might change our mind after this meeting. Come prepared. Thank you. I know this was 2 hours, a little bit of but I'm guessing Walrus is going to take 2 hours. Walrus, no. 9 a.m. might be a regular for us.
For some reason, my calendar invited
me to be
I try to write it down.
There's
actually a verse that was like, oh, I'm not gonna make it. I can see the time.
Go ahead and take that. So, you know, y'all waited to have those phone.
I'm
Why is this in here? Because you've been saying the opposite for years.
No, I think it is the committee representing them.
It's just not.